Hello, and welcome to the Warlord Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mann. In this episode, we'll be discussing the original Warlord series from DC Comics. In this Warlord Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Warlord number 40 through 43. James, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing all right. A little tired, but good.
Yeah, me too. I'm right there with you.
Now, all of these have backup features in them. Honestly, some better than others, but, you know, that's how backup features go.
Yep, I agree. Some are like, oh, this is difficult, and some are okay.
For me, some of them are just, I read, some I flip through, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know which ones you're talking about, too, before we even get to them.
So sad.
Yeah, we're both there.
All right, let's start with Warlord number 40.
Yeah, which we get taken back to a character we saw before.
Yes, we go to Kambuka, and we meet again. He was, I guess, the prince then, but now he's the king.
Yes.
Aram al-Ashir. He was in issues 25 to 28, so it's been a little while since we've seen him.
Yeah, it's been a while, and especially with us spacing these out, I was like, I know this guy. And I was like, oh, yeah. Then I remember, and I was like, okay, cool.
He's a ton of fun. I like him. I would be good if he shows up on a recurring basis.
Yeah. You know what? I would agree, because he is a fun character, and there's a lot of stories to be told there.
Yeah. I don't know that we see him after this stretch. I'm not saying we don't. I don't remember.
Okay.
But again, it's been 15 years since I read all this stuff.
Yeah.
My memory's not what it once was.
Yeah, that's okay. But I thought it was funny how they start off with the big sword fight with Shakira looking on.
Yeah. The duel, because, well, why not? I mean, it comes down to they always start with a little bit of an action sequence, so that's as good as any.
And I also really appreciated how after that little sword fight and then they get along, how they show Warlord kind of nicks his own thumb to put his sword away because it needs a little blood. So I did appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, and it's not just a duel for the sake of dueling. We get the, hey, he was a second-rate thief and a third-rate swordsman. Has he gotten any better or not? You know, things of that sort to refresh our memory of who this guy is.
Yeah. And I'll tell you another thing that I really appreciate about his books have such a cadence, Grell, that it feels so comforting and like, okay, I'm back home. You get that homey feel because, you know, you get the opening sequence and then you get the two-page splash. Which every one of his two-page splashes I've really enjoyed.
Yeah. They're a great action scene. It's funny because they definitely move the story along, but they also kind of pause the story at the same point.
Yes, I know what you mean.
It reminds me of how, like, I think it was in the 80s, a lot of TV shows would end on that freeze frame as they start to roll the credits and stuff.
Yeah.
It's not exactly like that, but it's similar. It's like, hey, we're starting the story, pay attention. So, definitely fun.
I agree. And I loved how we got Warlord with like a different, you know, garb in here. Because they go on and he's going to this kingdom and you get to see Warlord, or Travis, I should say, in a whole new like outfit, a costume.
It's funny because the costume definitely, you can see how it was made by the tailors of this kingdom.
Yes.
It resembles Ashir's outfit, but is very different from. You know, it's got the asymmetrical look and the headband, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was very cool. I liked it. And, like, it makes him fit in there based on how the people are dressing. And I almost got, like, a feeling of the Prince of Persia type thing, although he's the King of Persia now, with, like, the spires having those little onion domes and things like that. It just gave me that total Prince of Persia vibe, which was a video game series. I was like, this whole little thing works for me.
If you go back to the page where Travis is nicking his thumb on the sword to have it draw blood.
Yeah.
The second panel there has Travis and Ashir, and they look like brothers at that point, you know?
They legit do, except Travis with the gray beard looks a little older, but they look like brothers, identical. Yeah.
And they're two peas of a pod.
They are, and they really like each other, which I like.
Well, and I love how Ashir is basically complaining how boring being a king is.
Yeah, anything. We've seen this trope before, but you haven't read a ton of Conan, but Conan is like this. Conan, you know, him being the barbarian, but he ends up leading soldiers and becomes a king one day in his own right. And that same type of thing that you're seeing here with Aram is that it leads to boredom, because you go from the enjoyment of the thieving or the swashbuckling or the fighting or leading a band of mercenaries to just sitting there dealing with the problems of the kingdom. And that's a totally different skill set.
Well, yeah, all the action adventure stuff you do to get into this position of power in this kind of a world is what makes you ill-suited to have that position of power, because, like you said, totally different skill set is needed.
Yeah, so it's so funny. I was just like, I totally got the vibe of Conan in here. I was digging it, and I was like, this story really kind of worked for me. It was a lot of fun.
I think it'd be fun for somebody to do this sort of society, almost the feudalistic with the kingdoms and stuff like that. But you've got the warriors who fight the battles and all that stuff. But instead of becoming the kings and the rulers themselves, they say, no, this is my guy. He's in charge now. And they go on to the next fight.
Yeah, that would be cool. I would love that.
Because you then have almost that general who's kind of the man behind multiple thrones. And you know one of the guys is going to stab him in the back out of fear he's going to back somebody else, which would be why he would back somebody else. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So a ton of story potential with that.
Definitely. And I like how they show later on their hunting, you know? I mean, they have a whole subplot here with the people out to kind of get him. I don't know. Do you call him Aram or a Shear?
I go with a Shear because that's what he seems to refer to himself as.
Okay, we'll go with a Shear.
Six of one, half dozen of the other. As Ashir the Rogue was how he referred to himself.
Yeah, they have that whole subplot where they're like trying to assassinate him. Mm-hmm. And you see this happening because people who, I mean, back in the days, it could be anything from the Russian czars to back in the ancient kingdoms. Poisoning and taking people out is how you better oneself, or it's all political prowess, you know, and who you're backing and who you want to be in charge. But I like how it goes to the hunt, you know, and he's looking for adventure and he's out to hunt a deer, and how that totally flips with what those guys are doing.
Well, yeah, we get the whole palace intrigue type stuff going. And what sets up the need to go on this hunt is they're going to have a marriage banquet or whatever, because he's got an arranged marriage coming up.
Yep.
And the minute they said that, I'm like, I wonder who that could be.
I was thinking the same thing.
And again, you've got to set some stuff up or whatnot. And when they go hunting, I mean, it's not like, hey, let's take a rifle and shoot something at, you know, 50 paces or something. No, they're tackling the elk. They're very hands-on hunters.
Yeah, very hands-on. And it's very likely you could be wounded or killed, depending on how it plays out. You come back the hero or you don't come back.
I would almost say it's very unlikely you wouldn't be wounded or killed. I mean, geez.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you find it funny in the one panel when they have the saber-toothed cat who's coming after Ashir? Mm-hmm. And Travis puts it into a full Nelson headlock? I started laughing. I'm like, what the heck? Can you do this with a saber-tooth? I guess you can.
Well, apparently you can't, because then Ashir has to save Travis.
That's true. Yeah, that did happen.
I mean, it went from Travis saving him to him saving Travis. Just it spun on a dime like that, which is part of the fun.
Yeah, it was a ton of fun. I loved it.
Yeah. This is the kind of thing where if they were to do this as a live action show and cast the roles well, I think Ashir would wind up being a bigger part of the story than he was in the comics.
Oh, I think he most definitely would. I mean, there's tons of intrigue when you get to, like, I hate to harken back to it, but a Game of Thrones, you know, when people are in positions of power and you have these things like people plotting against the ruler and friends of that ruler, that builds into just so many intrigues and gray characters and layers and power plays and who can you trust? There's so much to be told there that it's like, that's the fascinating part of this kingdom, I think, or this world, I should say, not kingdom.
And when you've got a guy who's a thief and a king, the thief aspect brings a lot of potential, and if the actor really kind of embraces that, just like Bruce Campbell in the thief he played in Hercules and Xena back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Billy Campbell with the outrageous Okana in an early season of Next Generation. They're characters that just pop off the page and are scene stealers.
Oh, yeah.
So,
for sure.
And again, he's written that way here. Give him this role to the right actor, it takes on a life of its own.
Oh, it really could. And especially that skill set of a thief, having to be really vigilant, playing, you know, thinking ahead, almost playing 3D chess, you know, in your mind and outthinking your opponents, which you have to do to score and steal and make it out alive, that comes in handy when you're a king. I love it.
And also, pairing him up with Travis, who would be the lead character of the story, of course, you've got the whole one-upsmanship aspect.
Exactly, because Travis brings the whole charisma along with unquestionable talent as far as sword skill and some technology, too.
Mm-hmm. And whether Ashir can one-up him or not, it certainly doesn't stop him from trying.
Yeah. And just those guys, you know, their bravado and one-upsmanship, but at the same time, really liking each other and their buddies. You know, that works.
Yeah, it gives the whole bromance aspect to the series.
It does.
And it's something that with Machiste and stuff, he was a good kind of number two, but it was in a different way than Ashir is.
Very different. A very different character. He would be important to the series too, but it would definitely give the show a different feel when he was there.
I'm curious. I don't remember if Ashir and Machiste ever meet.
Oh, that's surprising.
I'm not saying they don't. I don't know. I don't recall.
Well, we will find out together.
Yeah, because they haven't met yet.
Yeah, they haven't. They haven't crossed paths.
Yeah, interesting. All right. Hmm. So yeah, we do have another assassination attempt, and I love it. They're coming back from the hunt. As they're walking into the palace, a guy jumps them from above, and Shakira, cat-like reflexes, handy spear, literally impales the guy.
Yeah, that was awesome. I love Shakira.
Yeah, she is not to be trifled with.
Yeah, so that was really cool, and they literally take them out pretty quickly, those assassins. And then we get the ultimate reveal in this book, which we both kind of saw. It was definitely shown to us, the bride riding in.
Well, before we get that, we get the reveal that the people after him are his own guards.
The guards, yeah.
So I thought that was fun. And then when we get the, oh, my betrothed is coming, and no doubt she'll be fat and ugly, and he's like, you've never seen her? No, it's a marriage of convenience, of state. And then in she rides, and of course we see it's Tara, which no surprise whatsoever.
Yeah, and that panel where you're looking at Travis's face just freaking out like, what? Mm-hmm. That was awesome.
Yeah, this was just a fun story all the way around.
Yeah. The backup story, what did you think of this one?
This one was kind of interesting. We're back in Wizard World with Mariah, Machiste, and Mongo. They are going after
the Necronomicon.
Yeah, the Book of the Dead.
Yeah.
Which I think I had confused at this point with the Book of Blood that Demios had.
Yeah, I kind of confused them too, but yeah, well, okay, Necronomicon, here we are. Let's go.
I'll admit, I've got mixed feelings on the whole Wizard World stuff because, and they call it out in this, Mongo is making references to stuff that won't exist for centuries from now. You know, Mariah's like, how can you know about martinis? We're in the past, they haven't been invented yet.
Yeah.
He's like, ah, oh, I'm a wizard. There are advantages. I'm like, okay. I mean, I don't object to it. It's just they're playing a little fast and loose.
Yeah, it kind of not breaks the fourth wall, but it almost breaks the story when you start bringing these future things into this world that it doesn't play any significance. Why are we doing this? It doesn't. I'm like, what's the point of this?
Well, it gives this thing a little bit of not quite a breaking of the fourth wall, but a wink, wink, nudge, nudge with the audience.
Yeah.
And a sense of whimsy and that fits Mongo. I don't know that it fits the other two.
Yeah, I would agree. It works for him, but not for the party.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought Zargon popped in pretty quick, stole the thing, and was out. Literally in two panels.
Yep. Boom, boom. Here I am. Here. See ya. Out. Boom.
And then it's we must go fetch the book before he figures out how to use it. And of course, Mongo is the ultimate in the reluctant hero of please talk me out of this.
Yeah.
So, you know, we head off. We have a little adventure on the side of a cliff because, well, where else are you going to do it? And we hit an avalanche and the cliffhanger of, oh, they've been buried.
Da, da, da.
Eight pages, one of which is an interior cover. They're pretty quick in these stories and a fair amount happens here.
Yeah.
I would argue more happens in these really seven pages than the average modern comic with, you know, three times that.
I would agree. And if you're talking about Brian Michael Bendis, more than a six-issue arc.
Yeah, there are a couple other writers that are the same thing. And
yeah, it's just so decompressed today. But yeah, a lot happens. At the same time, I feel like I'm yet to really enjoy a backup story as much as I do the main story in Warlord. But I mean, it's Grell versus these little worlds. I mean, it's, I don't want to say they don't matter, but they feel like they don't really, they're not that important.
Well, the advantage the Wizard World backups have is they are by Grell.
They are, that's true. They are by Grell versus the OMAC stuff.
Yeah. So I like the Wizard World ones better than OMAC.
Me too.
But less than the lead Warlord story, even in this case where they've got a lot of the same characters, because they're being a little more whimsical. And honestly, it doesn't feel like they're taking the story as seriously.
No, and the point I would say they serve is that it keeps two characters that you know are going to reappear and you know that they're important to the Warlord story. It keeps them front and center doing their own thing versus having forgotten in 20, 30 issues later. Oh yeah, who was he again? Oh, who was she? I forgot.
Well, not only does it keep them in play, it elevates them from supporting cast to lead.
Correct, correct. They're doing their own adventuring. They're not dependent on Travis.
Yeah. Now, granted, it's a lead in what feels like a lesser story because it's a backup, not the main, but it's good for them.
Yeah, I would agree.
So I thought it was fun. I'm curious how many more of these we get, and I know they return to the main Warlord stuff at some point.
Yeah.
I just don't remember when.
Not in these four issues we're reading.
No. Well, not in this issue or the next, and then we're back to OMAC for the backup. So
yeah. That's where it goes downhill quick.
Yeah. Well, shall we move on to the next issue?
Yeah, 41. Let's do it.
Now, this was kind of interesting because we start almost exactly where we left off of Ashir realizing Tara's pretty good looking.
Mm-hmm.
And Travis realizing Tara's about to get attacked. So, of course, he literally leaps to her defense.
Yep.
And makes short order of these would-be assassins, of which there tend to be a lot in this area.
Yeah, I'd be horrified to walk around this town.
I'm curious if it's anyone other than the Royals that have this problem, though, because it's all we've seen them attack.
That's true. That is very true.
But what was more surprising is Tara pretends not to know Travis.
Which I thought was weird at the beginning. I was like, what is going on here? But then later on, it's explained.
Yeah, yeah. I had mixed feelings about that whole thing, and this is the first meeting between Tara and Shakira.
What did you think of the way that played out? I thought it was so funny.
Shakira is definitely kind of and having a little fun with Travis at the same time.
Yeah, this is Shakira. She chimes in, his constant companion. That was so funny the way she did that. And she grabs his arm and holds him close. I was like, ooh, some cattiness with the cat.
Well, and I think there's an aspect of, if you're going to pretend not to know him, I'm going to pretend to really know him.
Yeah. And then the next panel was awesome, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
She literally turns around at Travis and sticks out her tongue, Shakira, after Tara and Ashir walk away. I was like that. I love that.
Well, because at this point, for all Travis knows, Tara's still really mad at him.
Yeah, exactly. He thinks, we went through the loss of a child. We had this stuff happen. I guess she's just done with me. You know, that's what he's thinking at this point.
They parted on not great terms.
Nope.
Of, you're not the man you once were.
Exactly. And he's definitely, in my opinion, not in love with Shakira because she's a freaking cat.
Well, he's not in love with Shakira because he's in love with Tara.
Because he's in love with Tara, too. Yeah. And she's a cat.
I don't know if that really factors in his thinking or whatever.
That's true. I'll tell you this. She's a heck of a good-looking cat.
Yes. Yes. As far as cats go, I think it's an ideal one.
Yeah. If you had to be with a cat, there you go.
Yeah. Well, and then Travis basically storms off of, oh, I'm going to go see if I can figure out this assassination stuff. And it's interesting because Shakira then basically distracts Ashir. It's like, okay, give me a tour of the place. Tell me your stories and whatnot. And I think that was just to give Travis the alone time he needed and the ability to then go sneak into Tara's chambers to have that private discussion of, okay, what the hell's going on?
Yeah. And I thought it was kind of funny. I was like, I wonder why they show this thing, you know, with her looking, when she's walking off with Ashir, she sees the little rat playing with, I don't know what that is, if it has some kind of little berry or something like that.
It's like a ball or something like that.
Ball.
Probably a berry, yeah. Makes more sense, yeah.
And then I was like, yeah, a cat's going to do what a cat's going to do.
Everything they tell us about Shakira, you know, her thinking there's nothing like a nice, fat, palace-fed mouse. She's a cat that turns into a woman. There's no two ways about it.
She has to be a cat. And I'll tell you what, this issue for me really highlighted her personality and her quirkiness, and it made me really like her even more than I already did this issue. Just seeing her cattiness as far as like the way she played around with Travis and Tara, and then also her cattiness, literally, I'm going to go chase a rat now.
Yeah.
That was so funny. I just loved it.
But the funny thing is, I could see a later creator saying, well, she could be either, and I'm going to go this other way if she's a woman who turns into a cat. And I would argue if they did that, that they would need to go reread some of these earlier issues.
Yeah, they didn't read it properly because she's definitely not. She's a cat who turns into a lady.
Yeah.
Lady form.
And I'm not saying any future creator does that. I'm just seeing in more modern times, we've seen plenty of creators that say, this is the take I'm putting on this character, even though there's plenty of evidence against it in the past.
Yeah, exactly.
If there's any hint of a shred of evidence in the direction they're leaning, that's all they see.
Exactly. But I'll tell you what, I was happy to see that when Travis, he finally got to speak with Tara, that she wasn't holding any ill will, and she literally kissed him, and they're trying to mend things, they feel like, and she's like, I didn't have a choice, and I didn't want to let on in case I'm forced to do this.
Yeah, there's a mention that this was all the decision of the Council of Elders.
Yep.
And we're going to see more of them, and I think Travis's assessment that they're nuts is pretty spot on.
Yeah.
But I also like how Shakira just kind of stumbles into, in the bowels of the castle, the guy who's plotting against the king.
That was very convenient, yes.
I think if you're king, the first thing you should do is make sure your castle doesn't have any kind of a dungeon throne room or something like that. That's just a bad sign if there's a place for your evildoers to hatch their plots or what have you.
Exactly. A secondary throne down in the basement, that's not a good sign.
Particularly with skulls on it and stuff like that. Yeah, not good at all.
Yeah. Down the security, you clean it up real quick.
Yeah. And we get a reminder that the Theron army is preparing to go strike Shambhala, and that this union with Kambuka is basically, the Therons will probably attack one nation, but they're not going to do two at once. So
exactly.
If we join up, there's safety in numbers.
And that is so true to anything in the, you know, the sword and sandal genre, which I don't want to say this is sword and sandal because it is, but it isn't.
It's heavily adjacent at the very least.
It's heavily adjacent because, yeah, it's all about alliances and who you know and who you're friends with and who you can depend on. And can you really depend on those relationships or not? Because otherwise you can get steamrolled. Boom. You're knocked out.
Well, and I like how Tara entered this thinking she could probably talk the king into a mutual defense agreement without a marriage.
Yeah, not very likely.
Well, certainly less likely now that Travis is here.
Exactly.
Because he's like, if he's going to try to marry you, he's going to die. You know?
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, it would mean war. It's like, ah, you know.
I like him, but I don't like him that much. I like you a heck of a lot more, Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and then the evildoers, knowing that Travis is up with Tara, bring in the guards of, oh, he's trying to betray the king and whatnot.
Yep.
That was predictable, but had to happen. The guy who has the guards attack him, Travis makes short work of them.
Yes.
The guy tries to hit him with magic, but the Hellfire Sword absorbs that.
Yeah, just sucks it all up.
And Travis is about to lay into him, and he's like, well, if magic won't work, apparently a smoke bomb will.
Boom.
Sure enough, it does.
It knocks him unconscious, and when they wake up, they didn't just kill them, they hung them over a pit. And I kept trying to look at that, and I was like, what is that big orange thing? I have no idea. Multiple eyes. It's just like a blob with a little bit of a mouth.
A blob with a definite mouth. Yeah, that whole thing looked like a bioengineered monstrosity.
Yeah. I didn't feel scared of it, but at the same time, I wouldn't want to be hanging over it.
I wouldn't say scared of it, horrified of it. I mean, yeah. I would not want to encounter that in reality.
Exactly.
But I love how this guy has basically gotten some of the other... I couldn't tell exactly what level they were, but leaders, but not at the king level, but it's like, side with me, we'll overthrow the king and whatnot, other would-be traitors or whatnot. And as he's trying to get them to rise up, Shakira's gotten Ashir in there. He's sitting there with bow and arrow ready of, you know, hey, your plot's over.
Boom.
And the guy's like, I don't think so. I'm going to, you know, drop your friends into the pit. You know, another quick arrow shot, and that's over. And the bad guy falls into the pit.
Yeah, and becomes monster food.
Yeah. And nobody seems to be surprised the monster is there.
Yeah. I like, just very casually, they're carrying on their conversation like that thing's not even down there, which is just funny. I'm like, wow, I would be more shocked that there's this evil skull throne, and there's a Cthulhu-like creature down in this hole, and I am completely clueless to it.
Yeah. I love it when Travis goes to explain about Tara and stuff, and Ashira's like, yeah, don't worry about it. I didn't realize she was your Tara. She's yours, done, you know, no marriage.
And very cool.
Yeah, he was cool about it. Again, they're bros. Of course they're going to be that way.
Yep.
Tara, however, does not take well to said agreement between them.
That was hilarious.
She decks Travis.
Boom!
Knees Ashir as he's, you know, trying to kiss the hand and stuff. She's not having it from either of them.
And then Travis's reaction is awesome. I'm going to win her.
Well, because she flat out says, I am not just, you know, a trophy to be had. I must be won. And he's like, well, okay. And he's done it before, so.
Yep.
I mean, that was just a great page.
It was a great page. It was a ton of fun. And I'll tell you what, I got excited when I got to the end of this issue when I saw Next War in real big red, because I was like, oh, cool, we're going to get the battle, and we will eventually, but we did have a backup here.
Yeah. We're back in the Wizard World stuff. This is continuing the story. Mongo conveniently saved them from the avalanche. Gosh, big surprise.
Yeah.
And then they encounter a guy who, for lack of any better name, I'm going to refer to as Gollum because he looks a lot like him.
Yeah, I was literally saying, Schmeagol Gollum, that's him. Yeah, yeah, that's who it is.
And Gollum knows about Sargon.
Yeah, like Sauron.
Well, did you notice the difference, though? In the previous issue, Sargon's name started with a Z, now it's an S.
Oh, I didn't pay attention to that. Oh.
I noticed that, partially because I was taking some notes, and I'm like, aw, come on, guys. I mean, it's not a big deal, but still.
Yeah, they literally had this Gollum talking like the Lord of the Rings movies. Like Smeagol in there. I like the way nasty peoples go away. And then when they said Sargon in here and they spelled it with the S, I was thinking, is that supposed to be like a amalgamation, like Sauron? I was like, oh my God, he's totally riffing on Lord of the Rings here.
Oh, totally, totally. And I think that may have been why they changed it.
Yeah, from the Z. So, okay. And I didn't recognize it the first time, but here it just stood out to me.
Oh, yeah. Well, and just everything about this guy reeks of Gollum, Six Ways to Sunday, and not in a bad way.
Exactly.
But in an unoriginal way, add to that the whimsy of the Wizard World stories and Mongo and stuff like that, and it's like, it's hard to take the story too seriously when they don't.
Exactly. Yeah. It was pretty, yeah, I agree with you.
And this cave happens to be a backdoor into this dude's stronghold.
Very convenient, another backdoor to the stronghold.
And they've got to go get the book. He's up the top of a staircase that doesn't seem to really go anywhere other than the pedestal for the book. And two guys are coming to talk with him. One of them happens to be about Machiste size. The other happens to be about Mongo size.
Yep.
Golly, I wonder how this is going to happen. So instead of it being too short for a stormtrooper, they basically take the guy in the cloak and the guy with the full knight armor head mask and stuff, take their place and use that to sneak up on Sargon. What I found interesting is Sargon immediately notices the steel mace that Machiste has in place of a hand. Machiste uses the other hand to throw a knife into the book, and then as the guy is starting to blast at them and stuff, Mongo transmutes the knife back into Mariah, who's basically now behind Sargon, and takes him out.
That was very cool. I liked how they did that, how they used that, and boom, she pops up and decks him.
Definitely clever.
Very clever, and then they got their book and they head for the hills at that point.
Unfortunately, before they get out of, I guess this guy's stronghold is in the middle of a volcano, maybe?
I couldn't tell if that's what it is. That makes more sense. I looked at it, I was like, is that supposed to be a waterfall? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, they're at the rim of something, trying to get over the edge of it and get blasted, and Mongo drops the book.
Yeah.
And, of course, Sargon doesn't have it, so it's a win on that score, but then it looks like Gollum winds up with it, and of course, that to me means it may be a little while, but we're going to have to get another chapter to this story.
Exactly. He literally looks at it and says, pretty. I was waiting for them to say, my precious. You know, yeah. I was like, oh, here we go.
I think there are lines at which they cannot cross lest they get in trouble.
Yeah, you don't want to plagiarize.
Well, apparently they did, they just didn't want to do it, you know, actionably.
Yeah, exactly.
Fun, but again, would I have rather the 8 pages been used for a longer Warlord story? Absolutely.
That's exactly where I am. Although I will say the Wizard World thing works way better than the next issue where we get OMAC.
I cannot disagree. Speaking of that next issue of war.
Yes.
Travis is headed off to go win Tara again. Shakira is tagging along. And they get near Shambhala and they come across the Theran army. It's got this big ram because they're getting ready to go knock the gates down. Travis is like, well, I guess I'm going to have to go fight them. And Shakira's like, you're nuts.
Pretty much. But I mean, like, it's a besieging army, and his first thing is, I'm going to take them out because I want to win the girl. That is kind of nuts, but that's who he is.
Yes. What gets me is he charges in, and Shakira knows she can't stop him.
Yeah.
But she's not going to watch him die. I love we get this full-page splash. Travis on his horse with his sword just laying into this army.
Yeah. And this scene, I think, is almost redone later on. We'll talk about that. But this was awesome. I love this scene. It was beautiful. You have a whole besieging army. They have their helmets on, their shields, their swords, spears. And he's riding the horse and just hacking through them. I loved it. I thought this was awesome.
Eventually, he does get thrown from the horse. Still takes a couple of these guys down. He's got the Hellfire sword, and that's apparently helping out and stuff. Is able to get back on the horse and get the hell out of there. But I think he did some significant damage to the army. Now, granted, they got their licks in, too. He's got an arrow or two sticking out of him.
Yep. And he tries to just rip that arrow out, because he took quite a few guys out, like you said. But ripping that arrow out, if you don't pull a certain way, you don't break it off and stuff, you literally make the wound a lot bigger. You can bleed to death very easy.
I'm going to argue he did it wrong.
I think he did, too.
Because that arrow comes out whole.
Yes, it does.
I mean, what I've thought was the right solution is you break it off at both sides and you leave it in there till you get proper attention. Otherwise, you just got this big gaping hole that the blood's going to rush out of.
Exactly. And he pulled it through with the feathers and everything on there, so who knows what came off inside the wound that's going to infect him. I just thought that whole setup, I'm like, he should have waited for some help.
Well, I think he was clearly not in his right mind, because we're seeing signs that the Hellfire Sword is having a definite effect on him.
Changing his persona, almost.
He thinks he's hearing stuff from it.
Mm-hmm.
I also thought it was interesting that after he's ripped the sword out, we get a couple of panels about how his daughter Jennifer has survived in a life raft after the Lady J boat crashed into something, possibly exploded. Based on what we see in the flashback, I'm going to go with, I guess it's Pat Chambers who was with her. I'm going to go with he probably died.
That's a good guess. I mean, they don't explicitly show it, but that would be the best guess just based on the whole situation and this what we're shown.
I mean, there's the possibility the explosion knocked him overboard. He survived elsewhere and we see him again.
But not likely, I wouldn't think.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd be tempted to do that creatively just because it gives him another reason to come back angry and whatnot. It's a plot line that'd be a shame to just cut off, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. And it's not shown here, so I don't know what's going to happen. We may see him again.
Yeah, I don't recall. I did like the mirroring of somebody coming across Tara and Shakira coming across Travis.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that's about all we see of Jennifer this time. Because Shakira has basically got a gift for Travis of, the city's still there. I figured you weren't done. You might be able to use this. And hands him one of the laser rifles from the Atlantean armory.
I thought that was really cool. And this was the part of the story where I was like, I was surprised because she's been this cat all along and not a love interest. And I'm thinking, this lady's a cat at this point. But she kisses him and it seems like more. And now she is going to be going off and doing her own thing. We see that here. But I was like, that's not a cat nuzzling her master, you know?
Yeah, yeah. She definitely has feelings for Travis, but knows he's spoken for.
Exactly. And so will this turn into a love triangle thread? I don't know. There's a possibility that was set up with this one panel.
I think it shouldn't become a full-blown love triangle, but it should be one where she would be a constant reminder to Tara, sometimes very explicitly so, of, if you're not going to want him, I'll take him.
Yeah, exactly. Or if something happens to Tara, he's not completely alone. You know, it could be used so many different ways.
At the very least, it sets up for a good story to be had of Tara and Shakira going and having some adventures together. Of, okay, how do they get along?
Yeah. And come on, who doesn't want to see Travis with his litter of kittens? I'm just kidding.
Wrong on so many levels.
I'm sorry. Oh.
Anyways, Shakira heads off into the jungle. Travis hops back on the horse. We see him on another full-page splash. He's got the sword. This time, he's also got the laser gun, and he's laying into the army yet again.
Yeah, this is almost the same scene. It's not identical, but it's almost the same scene, except now he's got the gun, so he's giving it to him even worse. So I was like, awesome. Now we got the new improved version of the scene.
I would love if they had done a backup of this story in 8 pages from the army's perspective.
I would have loved that, too. That would have been great. Oh, that would have been fantastic. I would have enjoyed it so much more than OMAC, and that would have been terrific.
I mean, imagine you got two of these guys, and like, geez, when are we going to get into the fight? I'm sick and tired of waiting and stuff. Oh, there's this one guy. It's one guy. Ah, the legion in front of us will take care of him. We got nothing to worry about. Oh, he's hacked through all of them.
Are you kidding me? He's one man.
Well, he's almost done. He's heading off. Oh, geez. Well, okay, we're good. When are we going to go attack this thing? It's been another hour. We had lunch. Oh, he's back. No, it could be a hilarious backup.
That could be really funny. I would have loved that. And I'll tell you what, this siege scene, first you got the Travis scene with him riding the horse, and then on the second page, the horse is down. So the horse has been killed and stabbed. But I love that panel too, because you see the fireballs going in. You also see that the army, they're using basically Roman almost technology with the siege towers that they're climbing up the interior to go over the walls. I just love this. This speaks to me.
Yeah. Well, and it tells so much of the story in just that panel.
Yeah, you just draw a picture, but it's so much going on. And he did put a lot of time into this, even though there's not 10,000 characters. There's just enough.
Well, and this is the sort of page that were you to turn it into like a TV show or whatever, you could expand this into a good couple of scenes, laying the groundwork ahead of time, just maybe in the background of this army's got the siege tower, they're building this, here are the defenses, here's all this coming into play. I mean, these 2 pages alone could be, you know, a good couple of minutes of just terrific action.
Yeah, just so much fun. And when we get to the page after this, it's still another full page of this battle scene. It's not the same type of scene, but it gave me the, you know, I remember the movie Troy, where the soldiers were at the wall, you know, and they're holding back the Greek soldiers who are coming against the Trojans. And all the Trojans were up there on the wall with their arrows kind of shooting down at the Greeks. And I was like, yeah, Travis can hold himself there and fight these guys off because of those people above him shooting the arrows down. They're almost cover fire for him at that point. So this works perfect.
I think the magic sword and the laser gun helped too.
That did help. The gun helps. The gun kind of definitely evens the play.
But, I mean, he's basically positioned himself in front of the gates of Shambhala of thou shalt not pass.
Yeah, I just loved all these pages. This was so much fun.
Yeah. And I love how he's basically, the army is backing off and he's like, hey guys, you gonna let me in?
That was funny. That was terrific. I loved it.
And then he meets the Council of Elders and he's like, take me to the queen. It's, she's not here? It's like, what the hell? She left before I did. How is she not here? And we get the reveal of she's been taken captive by the army.
Yeah, the Therans have captured, and he's like, are you kidding me? I should have stayed out there. I wouldn't have helped you guys. I want the girl. I'm not here to fight your battles for you. I mean, there's more to it than that. He's been to the city, and he obviously cares because it's Terra's people, but in the back of his mind, he's probably thinking, good Lord, what a waste.
Well, I think saving Shambhala is high on his to-do list.
Yes.
But clearly lower than saving Tara.
Yes, exactly. Tara takes precedence.
17-page story. What, 3 or 4 of those were full-page splashes, and then there was the 2-page splash for the title.
And you felt like it was so much going on, so much action. We had movement in the story, and I have more fun reading this than I do with a lot of comics that I get today.
Yeah.
That I'm paying $4, $5, $6 for.
This, to me, is a great example of using the full-page splashes well.
Yeah, to tell the story. He didn't have to put a lot of words, and yet a full story was conveyed to me. And I was just sitting there just going over the whole battlefield. This is awesome.
Now, of those last 3 splashes and also the earlier one where he's fighting the army initially, we do get a short paragraph to go with that of some caption and narration.
Correct. Yeah.
But it felt like so much more happened in those pages and whatnot compared to that recent issue of Iron Man, where it was almost all splash pages.
Yeah, the whole thing was splash pages, and I felt like this was so much more weighty, meaty, and meaningful than that Iron Man that I read.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and again, it told some interesting stories. Just the sheer audacity of one guy against an army twice, and he's doing pretty well.
Yeah.
And he pushes the army back.
Yeah. And, you know, this is the type of thing that I feel like we need a comic like this today. I mean, like today, you know, like a Conan or a Warlord. And the reason why I say that is it's taking place in a different world. It's taking place in a different time. And it's a guy just letting loose and being a guy and not having to deal with anything that's going on in our world today that kind of divides the masses of people, you know, whether it's this or that or politics or whatever that you see going on. This is true escapism to where you're just appreciating the character for being this tough, gung-ho, macho character that's just, I'm going to save the day. And I feel like we need that every now and then.
I agree. And I like how he's doing the right thing because there's nothing stopping him from doing it.
Exactly. Nothing stopping him and no questioning. You know, like a modern comic, Captain America does something. And they've had issues like that where people are questioning, why is he doing this? What's he doing? They show the view from the Russians. Why is this guy doing this in the Superman 78? And it's just, it's cool. It's a different story and it works. But this one is more of that black and white, good and bad. You just can stand back and enjoy it. You don't have to get into any nonsense.
Well, early in this issue, Shakira asks Travis, why do you make war?
Yes.
And he gives two answers. The first, once I had a dream for this world of yours, Shakira, I saw Skartaris as a place where all men could live in freedom and equality with equal justice for the smallest and the greatest. Maybe that dream still burns somewhere in my soul.
Yep.
That's a great answer.
That's really awesome.
Answer number two. Or maybe it's simply that I never feel so alive as when the scent of blood and the sound of battle are in the air and a stout blade is in my hand.
And that may be a more honest answer.
Probably, but the two aren't mutually exclusive.
Exactly. They're not mutually exclusive. It is who it is. And he's like, I get enjoyment from this stuff. And not to be dark, because it's not dark. He likes to be a hero. He likes the action. Living on a knife's edge, putting your life in the balance, there can't be any more exhilaration, I would imagine.
He's definitely an adrenaline junkie.
Exactly. You get the adrenaline pump. And you hear that from people. Some people get PTSD from battle. Some people miss the fix. And I know that sounds horrible, but it's true. And he's a miss the fix type of guy. And on top of it, he does have morals. So he's not just a raging lunatic out to kill, which is AKA the Punisher. He's a person who's trying to do good things, but likes to be in the thick of things, to right a wrong, to pick up a sword and take care of business.
I think he'd be just as happy not to have to fight, but he's not the least bit hesitant to do so for a good cause.
Yes. Yeah. It's just a ton of fun. I mean, this guy reminds me of Conan. Not exactly, but in so many ways, but almost unapologetic that that's the way I am. And that's who I am. And that's what I enjoy. And there's something nice about that. You know, Logan, Wolverine, I know what to expect from him when I was reading him. Today, it's gotten weird. But when you're reading Superman, you have expectations. And if you don't get that expectation, you feel like it's not true. I think this guy and Conan, my expectation going in is for them to be a bad, you know what, with a sword. Who is the hero and saves the day.
He's the warrior for the cause.
Yes, he is.
And we don't have a ton of stories of that kind of character these days.
No, they're few and far between. And I think that's what draws popularity to Conan when it kind of was revitalized recently at Titan and at Marvel, is people kind of need that one outlet, you know, something to scratch that itch. I don't need all my books like that, but it's nice to have that as an option.
Well, if all the books were that way, none of them would stand out.
No, we'd be bored to tears. I also need my Superman or maybe Batman or Captain America or whatever.
Or a good mystery story or something to have something different.
Exactly. Or a Vietnam War book. Whatever.
Yeah. All right. Backup feature this time around is OMAC.
Yeah.
And he's going and he's attacking Warner Brothers.
Yep.
And I've actually found this kind of an interesting read. In so much as, I mean, I'm not going to say the story's great. It's not. We get a little recap of, okay, why is he doing all this fighting, all this kind of a stuff. But he winds up fighting the Vanquisher, or just Vanquisher. There's no the.
Yes.
Which I recognized.
Okay.
From Blue Devil about seven, eight years later, the mid-80s run of Blue Devil, there's a version of Vanquisher, different version.
Okay.
And he was in there for at least a good couple of issues. I don't remember how many. But so to me, I recognize that was kind of fun. But a lot of this other stuff, like there was a mention of arms coming out of this wall that were probably created by Pseudo People Inc., a Warner Brothers subsidiary or whatever. And there was the implication that that was from a past OMAC story. It's like, well, I haven't read anything other than these backup features of this OMAC. I've read later OMACs.
Exactly.
And I'm like, okay, we get him fighting the Vanquisher. Warner Brothers is apparently using this as footage for a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about all we got in the seven, eight pages.
Yeah, not very exciting stuff. But I mean, it was cool. Nice little fight scene. But I mean, it was definitely, it didn't pertain to Warlord at all like Wizard World. And I didn't enjoy it as much.
Yeah. Well, and I think they have failed to set up OMAC in this backup feature as action-packed versus, again, so much exposition and whatnot. Because, again, we've got a page of the backstory of reminding us why is he fighting at all?
Yeah. One other thing I noticed, the first story we got from OMAC, was that Jim Shooter?
Jim Starlin.
Jim Starlin. I meant Jim Starlin. Oh, my gosh.
And totally different creative team since.
Exactly. I was like, I don't know why, but they had Starlin do that first, which was horrible. It was an expo dump and a half. But then they immediately switched creative teams, which I thought was just weird that they do that, but whatever.
Well, given that first installment, I don't blame them.
This is horrible. The feedback we got is you're fired.
I mean, and what we're getting here isn't atrocious. It's not, geez, how could they publish this? But it's uninspired and not a high point of the form in any way, shape, or form from the writing, the art, or any of that. And for it to be coming after Grell has just done such a great, 17 pages, it's the wrong backup for this.
It really is. It feels like a palate cleanser in all the wrong ways. Like you read it and you're just like, oh, this is, it left a bad taste in my mouth. It's like you went from honey to vinegar at the end, and it just was a little bit off-putting.
Yeah, there was absolutely nothing in this making me think, wow, I can't wait to see the next installment.
Yeah.
So I'm disappointed with the OMAC backup feature. I am curious if reading the OMAC series that preceded this would change our opinion of that better or worse or at all. I don't know.
Yeah.
And there's nothing here making me think, hey, let's do that.
No, I came out of this just getting the feeling, when is this done? I don't need this. And I know that sounds horrible, but we've had that same opinion with current books that have backup stories. We're like, okay, I'm ready for this to be out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Next issue.
Yes.
At this point, Tara has been taken captive by the army. Travis is aware of that. Tara, I think, is aware that Travis has laid into the army a time or two that day.
Yep.
So she's just biding her time. They don't realize they have the Queen of Shambhala. They think it's just some serving wench.
Exactly. I thought that was kind of funny that they don't know who she is. And I also thought it was hilarious, not hilarious, but almost like perfect that because Travis has fought his way into the castle or the kingdom there, he has to now fight his way out to get Tara. So you get the opening battle sequence. He's fighting through that same guy. Those guys are got to be like, him again?
The splash page, I think, was her remembering him fighting to get into the castle, or what she had seen or heard of it. Because he's then in the castle talking with the Council of Elders.
That's right. Okay, yeah. And I'm sorry, I read this back on Sunday. I'm like,
oh. No, it's all right. I can see the confusion, too. But he's like, oh, the Therons have her. And the council guy's like, oh, then she is lost. And he's like, no, she's not.
Because this is where they have the scheme to distract the army.
Well, it's where Travis has the scheme.
The scheme, yes.
The Council of Elders, this guy, for some reason, he reminds me of Edward James Olmos.
Oh, yeah. I could see that.
And he's like, oh, the council will make no bargains with the Therons. Travis pulls his gun, then stay the hell out of my way. And we set up that the laser rifle is out of juice.
Yep.
Given he fought the army to a standstill, I can understand that. And Travis's plan is to get a bunch of volunteers. He wants 500 men who can swim.
Which is quite a few.
It's a ton.
Yeah.
And they're going to swim without armor through the flooded chambers underneath the city to swim out and outflank the Therons.
Which was very clever, but at the same time, a little bit horrifying, swimming with a sword underwater to come up around the backside of this army.
Well, and the way this was phrased and shown, I was expecting Travis to go with them.
Me too. I was like, okay, show him the way. And that didn't happen.
No, because next thing we know, Travis is riding up on, it looks like, the same horse that we thought died last issue.
It had a spear in it.
Yeah, and he's going to Qatar Shang, which I don't know if that's the king or the general or whatever, and he's basically offering to settle this once and for all through single combat, and offering not even to use the laser gun.
Just my sword. And they're like, all right, welcome to Braedor. The guy's name is Braedor.
Yeah, because this guy chooses a champion, whereas Travis is going to fight himself. And this dude, Braedor, has, what, four arms?
I was like, four arms, a big hoop ring through his nose, and literally is able to hold three weapons and a shield.
Yeah, because he's got the shield, the mace, the dagger, and the sword?
Yep, not good.
And all Travis has is that handy raven shield that he's had since he got it out of the place that had the treasures and stuff.
The dungeons, yeah, or the, whatever that was.
Well,
yeah.
This was the one that had the bird come off it at one point.
Exactly, yeah. And so, he never did go back for that treasure, by the way.
Not yet, but may still need it. He's just got that and the Hellfire Sword.
But I'm with you. I thought it was funny because I thought, apparently these guys know the whole plan with swimming up behind the army. Because as the fight's going on, you see all those guys start diving into the water and they're getting sucked up this little tube or swimming through the little tube.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was like, huh, they're very trusting. And Travis is very trusting of them to just leave and let them do this plan on their own.
Remember the story where the thing flooded and they came out in the pit and stuff? That's
yeah.
What we're flashing back to.
Ah.
I don't remember which issue that was, but that was early on.
That was a long time ago.
But that certainly explains how Travis knew the way and could explain it to them.
Exactly.
But while they're swimming and circling around back, Travis is fighting defensively.
Yeah.
And he's getting wailed on.
Wailed on to the point to where the shield crumples almost into a U and then literally comes off his arm. And that sword's glowing, but he's just like, and then his face turns red.
Well, and Braedor's, you know, enough of this, go kill him. At which point, Travis sees the flaming arrow signal from his army of, hey, we're ready. And you know he had to be thinking, it's about damn time.
Exactly. I'm about ready to go out. Come on, guys. I lost my shield.
Because then I think he basically slices Braedor in half.
Yeah, boom. Because it goes right through him like butter, it seems like. And then you see almost, they're kind of wearing like loincloths at this point and boots, essentially. The unarmored guys running out, attack behind them. And then from the front gate, the other half of the army armored, boom, and they're sandwiched in between, the Therans.
I think the group in the city needed to be prepped a little better.
Yeah.
Because they're like, for Tara, for the queen. And the guy's like, wait, queen?
What are they talking about? We have the queen? I didn't know that.
So he's already got Travis's gun. He grabs Tara and he's about to shoot her with the laser rifle.
Yeah.
And of course, Travis lets him. It goes click. Nothing happens. Travis pulls his pistol. Goes bang. Guy goes down.
Boom.
I'm thinking he's lucky that this laser pistol didn't have like an auto recharge after some time or something.
Yeah, he was very trusting that nothing was going to happen.
Yeah, that dead is dead for the battery.
Yeah. So, boom. And then he releases Tara, cuts the chains off her.
And they join the fight.
These two issues were really fun issues because it's just tons of battle sequences, tons of fighting, big battlefields, Travis close up, just swinging, going crazy. And it ends, all's well that ends well, but there's people that are surrendering to Travis at one point.
Travis is about to lop one of their heads off, yeah.
Yeah, and Tara has to grab his hand because that sword has affected his mind so much that it's just, he has the bloodlust that the sword does.
But he instantly realizes that and chucks the sword into nearby body of water.
And did you like the arm?
Yeah, the glowing hand grabs it. The Lady of the Lake takes its Excalibur or whatever.
That's what I was saying. I was like, is this the real story of Excalibur going on?
I'm wondering if this is how the sword got into the past.
Ah, yeah. I could see that.
Because I think it wouldn't take much but a line or two of dialogue or a couple of panels in a Wizard World backup to kind of complete the loop.
Yeah. This was such a fun issue, though, because you go from Travis almost going crazy a little bit. And we've seen stories like this where something controls the mind, but he's strong enough and his girlfriend, wife, whatever you want to call her. Used to be a wife, now a girlfriend. I don't know.
Well, they're back together at the end of this.
They're back together. They're split up for a while. Helps him overcome. He tosses the thing. And then you get a nice little moment at the end with the piece of wood.
Well, I like how it's like, okay, we've won. Here's the warlord. Travis and Tara back together. Guy comes in on horseback of, Travis, I have important news. And he's like, not today, you don't.
Yeah, leave me alone.
And then after he and Tara have had some time, he does talk to this guy. It is Eitan, and we find out he's got the Lady J thing. What's happened to Jennifer? Don't know. Do you want to go find out? And Travis is like, I just got back with Tara. And she's like, you know, I know who you are. Go.
Yeah. And that was kind of cool because she's not angry at him, and he's really sad. I mean, he wants to go help his daughter, too. But he's like, I just got back with the woman I love. And it's tough, but I think she respects that he went.
Does she even know who Jennifer is?
I assume, but maybe not. It hasn't been specifically or explicitly shown in here that she does. But you would think somewhere in between the panels, he must have said who this is. I don't know. You would think.
He wouldn't have had any reason to that evening.
Yeah.
And this is the first time Tara and Travis had a chance to talk in a while.
I don't think she'd be okay with him riding off to see the lady without her knowing who the heck it is. I don't know.
All she knows is he's going to help somebody.
Yeah. Good guy.
Yeah. And I love how it ends with Travis and Eitan with the banner riding off to go deal with that.
Because he's another character I really like. I like Eitan. He's cool.
Yeah. He's a ton of fun. And this is where, as confusing as I find how time can transpire in Skartaris, this was a good use of having somebody off-panel growing from a boy to a man in short order.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think it gives this character a background with Travis that few would have.
Exactly, yeah.
And then we've got the OMAC backup.
Once again, to leave us on a bad note.
It's OMAC fighting the Vanquisher, and then OMAC takes care of the guys kind of behind the scenes directing the action and stuff. I guess the actual Werner brothers.
Yeah. They weren't too impressive.
Yeah. It was a by the numbers, and oh yes, this guy he's partnered with is going to try to take over everything, because that's how we'll have peace. I'll be in charge.
That's a perfect way to describe it. By the numbers, nothing exciting. Just, it felt like, oh, I need to do 8 pages. Here's 8 pages of your standard fare. Yeah, there you go. Like, there was no inspiration and no excitement behind it. It seemed like the person writing it didn't really want to be there for the job.
Yeah, yeah. And I know there are a lot more talented people in comics at this time.
Yeah.
So I don't know if somebody really thought this was the best thing since sliced bread, let's get it out there, or just they had pages to fill, or what?
Yeah, what is this, like the backup story is the proving grounds for the new talent? I don't know what the thing is here, but going from something that I feel like it's just a fantastic comic to something that's serviceable at best and not good, usually.
Yeah.
It's just, it's disappointing.
I agree with that. I think they would have been better off, and I certainly would have preferred it, if they dumped the backup for OMAC and it had been a 40-cent book instead of a 50-cent book.
Yeah.
But that wasn't an option for them. They were doing the higher price. They needed to justify it. But it's clearly a simpler art style, and I mean no disrespect to the artists and stuff, but it's just the art's not on par with the previous story, and well, frankly, neither is the story.
Yeah. And those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it, and here we are. Complaining about the same backup stories in today's comics. It's just funny how that comes full circle. It's like, oh God, here we are again. I'm like, I get to the point, and not to sound, you know, arrogant or anything. I'm just like, okay, fine. Inflation, charge me the dollar. Don't give me the backup story because I'm not getting anything out of it. Just don't even give it to me. Just say, oh, sorry, inflation. Here you go, a buck.
You know, I hear that and kind of agree with it, but then I remember some of the backup features of the Huntress over in Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
The Whatever Happened To in the backup of DC Comics Presents. There were a lot of backup features that were actually really good, and there were some other ones in Warlord that were good.
You know what? There's something there, because there are some that have worked, and there are some where I've read the backup, and I'm like, this is actually a little bit better than the main story, but they're few and far between, and I'm thinking, especially at a high price point today. And imagine back then going up from 40 to 50, that they felt like that was a much higher price point. Hey, man, give me somebody good. Give me a good story, you know, or something that where it feels like the person cares, not that they're just throwing it in there.
Well, I would be tempted to have a different editor for the backups than the main.
Yeah, I would agree.
Because you've got more creative teams potentially you're dealing with. You've got the shorter page count. It's a different style of storytelling.
It's a different style, and it's a more difficult, I actually think.
And I think it requires a bit more serialization, because you're getting, in some cases, it feels like a scene, and that's about it. I mean, if you've got a different editor for these things, they could be focusing more on getting them done on time, having the serialized story, focusing on the right kind of story for this.
Yeah, and I think, to your point, if you had a different editor who was focusing on this backup and maybe a few other backups that DC had at the time, or Marvel was having at the time, maybe it could be a small team of like 4 or 5 writers or 6 writers that are doing it, and you could actually have some magic, some gems, and some talented books that could spin off into their own regular series if you created enough energy and enough buzz behind them.
Yeah, and particularly if you're going to use it as a proving ground for creators, having somebody who can spend a bit more time with them, give them the coaching, and get some better work out of them.
Yeah.
But that editor would still need to work in tandem with the main editor for each book.
Exactly. And the closer they can get it to the main story, like the Wizard World and Warlord, I think the more impactful, because if I'm already a fan of the property, I don't want to read something completely different. And Omax is so different.
I would have been okay with a story of this, I was going to say of this caliber, but I wouldn't have been. Something, if the backup had been some kind of Tales of Skartaris, and it was just, sure, a lesser creative team, but still somehow germane to the bigger story.
Yeah.
And again, I think they missed the opportunity last issue of, let's see that day from Travis wailing into the army a few times from the army's point of view.
Exactly. I think that would have been fantastic, and you and I both would have enjoyed it, and they could have made it actually quite funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Totally. Totally.
Yeah. But I'll tell you, overall, I enjoy most of what we read in Warlord, almost everything. There's only been like one errant issue here or there that I was like, eh, it's okay. But the war things, I really loved them. I had a lot of fun with these 4 issues.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're 43, 44 if you count the first issue special issues into it. Not all of them are going to be perfect. There were a handful that it's like, yeah, I could have skipped that one or what have you. There was the reprint issue and a few things like that.
Yeah.
Overall, everything we're getting in the main feature is solid. Some of it's excellent. Some of it's just good. The backup features, I'm hoping the Omax stuff doesn't last too much longer. I think it's got another couple of installments, which is too many, but what you gonna do?
That's where we are.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool.
Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.